The Lord be with you.
And with
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
Some Sadducees, those who deny that there is a resurrection, came forward and put this question to Jesus, saying, "Teacher, Moses wrote for us, if someone's brother dies leaving a wife but no child, his brother must take the wife and raise up descendants for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married a woman but died childless. Then the second and the third married her, and likewise all the seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. Now at the resurrection, whose wife will that woman be? For all seven have been married to her." Jesus said to them, "The children of this age marry and remarry, but those who are deemed worthy to attain to the coming age and to the resurrection of the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. They can no longer die, for they are like angels, and they are the children of God, because they are the ones who will rise. That the dead will rise, even Moses made known in the passage about the bush, when he called Lord the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And he is not God of the dead, but of the living, for to him all are alive." Some of the scribes said in reply, "Teacher, you have answered well." And they no longer dared to ask him anything. The Gospel of the Lord. Yeah, it's a great little passage. Really, advances the narrative of the gospel really quite, I'd say quite forcefully, but quite well. The challenge is, I think, there are any number of, say, points where we might find ourselves derailed by what's going on here. Okay, so want to give this first little thing, you know, this riddle that the Sadducees give, right? They deny the resurrection of the dead. And then they seek, you know, as is quite common in our day, you know, not to do battle on, say, intellectual terms or on, in terms of, say, the truth, reasoning, the scriptures, and the like, but they seek to answer their adversaries by ridicule. Yeah. So the idea is for the Sadducees, well, yeah, come on, how can it be that God will raise the dead when, you know, this woman can have seven husbands? Which man will be her husband in the resurrection of the dead, right? So the good part, of course, would be to say, okay, if you look at it, you take that part seriously. But they're saying the whole thing is ridiculous. They're presenting an extended argument ad absurdum, right? The whole thing is, if the resurrection is true, then all these absurdities come out. And because those absurdities can't possibly be, then the resurrection also can't be true. Jesus, of course, takes exception with it, whole and entire, and gives them, you know, good reasoning, both according to the scriptures and reason itself. He is proposing, of course, that the resurrection is what God will do. He will raise up Israel on the last day, on the day that he returns as king of the kingdom of God. But he will also, not simply the new Israel, but he will restore all things that have been handed over to him by his father. Yeah, so he's going to say, as it relates to the ridiculous argument that's proposed by the Sadducees, that, okay, the children of this age marry and remarry, those who are deemed worthy to attain to the coming age and to the resurrection of the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. He's not saying that people here who are married will not attain to the coming age. He's saying that, in fact, that there's a qualitative difference between this age and the next in the fact that, right, they no longer die. In the resurrection of the dead, we no longer die. We no longer then need marriage as the propagation of a family line or even as a species as a whole. So the whole thing looks a good bit different as a result of that, yeah? And I would say we can puzzle over the nature of marriage and the like in the face of resurrection and certainly eternity. We know that marriage is a sacrament here that does not actually perdure into the age to come. I don't think that's, you know, it's not, say, offensive. Because of course it's from God who's the author of these things. But he's the one who, of course, given us the sacraments as a way to participate most deeply in his own life of love now and to advance most readily his mission. That's what we're supposed to be doing with marriage, right? That's what we're supposed to be doing with the priesthood. That's what we're supposed to be doing with the Eucharist. So the idea is that participating in God's own life of love now, seeking to advance his purposes, we are, say, in some, say, small part, ushering in the age to come when God is all in all. Yeah, and so our participation now in God's own life is what anticipates that future reality. And marriage is part of, say, our marriage now is our participation in that future reality when God is all in all. So we anticipate it by allowing God to be all in us, right? We're open and eager to receive and embrace his Holy Spirit and live by his direction and live sustained by him in the task of bringing his love to life. We do that, say, we do that as we worthily participate in any sacrament, of course. Yeah. So then, the age to come is quite different. This is what he means when he says they are like angels. Yeah, he's not talking about this. It would be totally incongruous for him to say, okay, the resurrection is not physical. That doesn't make any sense at all. The resurrection is a physical reality. He's not going to say the resurrection of the body doesn't include the body. That doesn't make any sense at all, right? So his sense that they are like angels is that they do not have to, say, propagate the family line. There's no more human life to be born, you know, in that age. Okay, so this is number one. That's their argument. The other is this. He goes back to the book of to the books of Moses in order to propose, you know, so an argument of substance as it relates to the resurrection of the dead. The Sadducees are supposed traditionalists, yeah, in the sense that they don't want to take the authorship of the rest of the Hebrew scriptures beyond the first five books as authoritative. Yeah, so they say, okay, no, we'll take the books of Moses, the first five books of the Hebrew scriptures. But after that, we're not really interested. That's just new stuff, you know, so like modern stuff. Okay, and Jesus says, okay, well, then let's go back. We say, even Moses made known in the passage about the bush, right? Even Moses, right, from the books of Moses, he gives the response, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. It's the God of the living, right? So they are alive to God. They're alive to God, yes, in disembodied form, as they await the resurrection of the dead. Yeah, this is Jesus's point. Yeah, they are alive, and we are anticipating the resurrection, in which, right, they will live again as humans. And I say that, okay, puzzle over that yourself. I would say you're a human is body and soul. Okay, there is no human that is not body and soul. So the three are alive to God. And we anticipate their resurrection from the dead. Okay, that was all preamble. You want to have, yeah. Okay, a bit of despair this morning for you. That was all preamble. That was just a setup, okay? Now I'm going to get to the preaching, okay? This is the challenge. This is what's going on. That's the argument, yeah? On the surface, the back and forth. What's going on behind that? The Sadducees are the rulers of the people. They're the aristocracy, yeah. They're the people who have wealth and riches and whatever, and they exercise some leadership, whatever that means, over the temple. So they're using that for their advantage. You can imagine this central focus point of the national life of Israel. They have it. And they're going to use it to generate wealth and prestige and the rest for themselves, okay? They find, of course, that denial of the resurrection of the dead works for them in their system in which they want to become rich and powerful. Yeah, and they recognize that those who acknowledge or hold to the resurrection of the dead themselves are warriors for truth and justice, yeah? And if you don't believe in the resurrection of the dead, yeah, if this is all you have, and also, can I say to the point, if you believe that, When we die, we simply drift off as disembodied whatevers and float around some orb or something that's God. If you believe that kind of Platonist type afterlife, then you also don't. You also will be easily herded by those who are who have power and control. Yeah, it's only when we have a deep abiding belief in the God who will raise the dead, who will overcome, right, and overturn every act of injustice, that we can live freely for him, that we can live freely for truth, truth incarnate, Jesus, and we can live for the justice that he wants to bring, which is not just the justice of, you know, taking the pie and dividing it up this way or that way. It's a justice that makes the pie bigger because this justice is inspired by and animated by love. So it's a higher pitched justice that is the ordering of charity, the ordering of God's good world according to his own life of love. The Sadducees, of course, oppose that. They'd rather keep their piece of the pie, do you know, and try to make that bigger. That's their game. That's not the plan of God, and that's not living to his purposes. Okay, so here's the challenge. Jesus then is going to his death, and he will rise from the dead as the truth bringer, truth in the flesh, and justice bringer, right, as he embodies God's own life of love and defeats death and comes out on the other side to start building up or building out God's kingdom. Yeah, he inaugurates God's kingdom in the cross. He implements his kingdom in and through us as we give ourselves over to the life of charity that he now breathes into us, that he inspires in us, and we conform ourselves to. Jesus is going to overturn every injustice and so bring that higher pitched justice to the world at last. Yeah, this is really the hope of our hearts. And Jesus is doing that. And of course, this means that every kingdom that stands opposed to him will be laid waste, which is why at the end you see they no longer dare to ask him anything. Why? Because he's a dangerous man. Yeah? Jesus is a dangerous man. He will make every wrong right. Yeah? So he will rectify every injustice, which means that he is here in order to turn us inside out, so that we can turn the world inside out. Or I say like turn the world upside down, but really it's putting the world right side up. Yeah, so much of the world's day-to-day activity is based on idolatry and injustice. Yeah, and Jesus has come to take that upside down world, that upside down reality, and put it right side up. But it begins here. If it doesn't begin here, this is the foothold that Jesus has. And we can look around and say, man, that's a pretty poor foothold. You know, like, look at us. We're so fragile. You know, we're so wicked ourselves. We're so tired. You know, we're not exactly the renewing force that we would expect God to create. But no, this is his foothold. This is God's foothold as he works towards the restoration of the entire world, as he works towards the reality of the resurrection of the dead, the overturning of every injustice. This, we are his foothold. Yeah, we are the place where he is making a beginning. Okay? We might dress differently when we come to Mass and wear, you know, crowns and cloaks and the like. I mean, if I have to wear silly clothes, then maybe everybody else should wear silly clothes as well, right? But we have to see each other also kings and queens and right of God's rule. We have to see each other with a dignity to do the most important demanded, right, by the fact that God has called us into his renewal movement to do the most important work in the world. Right? That in anticipation of him righting every wrong, we would be that renewal force by which wrongs are righted today. It begins in us. We have to allow him to bring us into communion with him. We have to allow him to breathe into us his own life-giving love so that we can be breathing that same love into the world in every conceivable and every practical way, in every imaginable way. We're going to go and love the world into new life in anticipation and as a participation in the life of the world to come.